Hello there, Graham Connors. Welcome to the Last Post magazine, and it's a pleasure having you.
Thank you very much, Greg. Always good to catch up, and sending my best to your part of the world at this point in time. So from here in North Queensland.
Yes, well, it's a wonderful spot. And of course, North Queensland brings to mind your second album, actually, I think in 1988, but more on that in a minute, if you don't mind. Graham, we share a heritage, I guess, both born in the same year, and we've witnessed a lot of transaction in Australia in our time on the planet. How did it all start for you? I mean, you're from Mackay originally in Queensland. What are your memories of your early childhood?
Well, I'd have to say, Greg, Mackay was a sleepier town than it is now. Mm-hmm. And for all that, thoroughly enjoyable, there was a sense of freedom. We lived down near the beach, near the mangroves, and our parents could let us sort of disappear on a weekend. It was a bit like Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn, you know. We'd be down the mangroves running around like madmen,
yes,
creating our own games, and very occasionally we'd be allowed to make a little lean-to and spend an evening with friends. It was an idyllic place and time, and I will be forever grateful that we got to experience that. The late 50s, early 60s was a post-war, a sense of optimism, I think, and a sense of community, and kids generally felt protected.
It was an incredible time, Graham, because things were happening so quickly, and we look back now, it was a black and white memory of Australia. It was soon to turn to colour, but there was so much going on leading into the 60s.
That's a lovely way to say it, a black and white image turning to colour. The 60s was a boom, you know. By the time the youth generation thing happened, and I think, you know, what we as little kids would hear our parents talking about women's liberation and all these various other things. It was exciting. It was like there was a sense of change, something in the air.
Yes, well said, well said. And you spoke then of going down the mangroves, etc., as a child. When this fueled, I guess, some of your writing, which has been described as a personal journey put to music beautifully. How did you first become aware that you wanted to record this with music and lyrics?
Well, if we jump forward about 20-odd years to around about 1984, so I was living in Sydney by then with a couple of sons of my own. We were very early off the starting blocks with family, my wife Lynn and I, and I had been pursuing my career in the music industry since 1973, Christmas 1973,
right?
When at 17 years of age, I very fortunately was offered the supporting role on a tour with Sherbet. So I travelled around regional New South Wales as the opening act for the group Sherbet. And that led, via rather circuitous means, to being also offered a recording deal with Festival Records. And from there, we moved to Sydney, and other very good work followed. I toured with Chris Christopherson, Rita Coolidge, Bill Cosby, Dave Allen, Liza Minnelli, Peter Allen. It looked like I was on a trajectory for stardom, without a doubt, but all through that period, I was trying to write songs that sounded like hit songs. How do I say this? About the best way I can say it, that I was not writing my story.
From the heart?
No, I was really just, I was looking at the market and thinking, oh, wow, that song's working, you know, I'll try and write something like that. Well, of course, you're always 6 months late by the time if you're copying the marketplace. And it was about 84, I'd moved into music publishing because things were not moving forward in my performance career.
Mm.
And to be honest, I got to about 87 and I thought, this is not for me. This is that dream that I had of being an entertainer, a traveling artist and recording artist. I'd had one album out called And When Morning Comes.
Was that the one produced by Chris? Chris Christopherson?
Yeah, Chris Christopherson produced four tracks.
He must have seen something in you.
He was very generous to do that. Very generous. It was between him and Billy Swan, who was his guitarist at the time.
Wow.
Alan Healy, who was the head of Festival Records.
Mm.
These events just sort of happened around me, and it was just amazing to be in the studio recording with such an iconic artist.
Yeah.
And that did give me a bit of a push along, but still it failed to send out a clear message about who Graham Connors as an artist was. And it wasn't until this latter period when I decided, you know, my career had run out of steam, that I went into the studio and recorded a bunch of songs that I wrote that really fully utilized my memories of growing up in the tropics. And the reason I did the recording was because I thought, this is it, I'll be leaving Sydney, I'll head back home to Mackay, but I will have a document, a recorded document, that sort of says, well, once in my life I was a songwriter, and my children could always hear these songs like Metho Man, Cyclone Season, Let the Cane Fields Burn, Mango Shade, and they were honest songs about my life.
Well, we're glad you did that, because this is the reading of the album itself. It reflects well on your life, and it's a beautiful album, but go on.
Well, it took me completely by surprise. With the assistance of Di Manson from ABC Music, ABC Records, she released it, and it just went through the roof. It was like, instead of being the final word on my career, it was the opening sentence, you know. So,
yeah.
So from there now, there's 20 albums. So it was a fairly precarious start when you look at it. It could have gone either way.
Yeah.
But thankfully... don't get me wrong, I was working hard to do my best, and I was thinking all the time as an artist, you know, what is it that an artist is responsible for? What do you do, you know? Bear in mind, you know, I came from a little country town where an artist was Picasso, you know?
Yeah.
You never ever thought about turning your own life into a work of art of any sort. And it was really just writing those stories and songs and capturing that time and place that became my art.
I remember the first hearing the album North. My brother was in radio at the time and sent down a copy to me in Melbourne. And I was knocked out from the beginning, because it seemed to be, you talk about honesty, and that is obvious to anyone on a first listen. The songs on that, it's one of those albums where every song is valuable, and there's not many albums I can remember that are like that. Maybe 10 or 12 come to mind, but it's an album that you can listen from beginning to end and feel satisfied. So it's a magnificent effort.
Well, it's nice of you to say. I do know that every song... I could choose the songs. I had enough songs to put together for an album, and based on the fact that this was a document of my life, it was very easy to make the various decisions. You know, I had had some success prior to North with songs I'd written for Slim Dusty, song that I'd co-written for John English called Hot Town.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as if I was sort of like starting on just straight off the blocks. You know, I'd already experienced a bit of success. But those songs, the ones for Slim, I'm sorry about that.
No, that's fine.
The ones for Slim... some of those were taken as sort of the inspiration from experience in my life, but they were nowhere near as personal as anything that happened on North.
Mm-hmm. No, a beautiful album and one that you can play time and time again. So what happened? What changed for you after North?
Well, I realised that there was an audience for my work.
Mm.
And that confidence is invaluable to any artist. If you feel like no one's listening, then it's a chore to get up and do your job, isn't it? You know, it's like, why am I doing this if no one's listening?
Yep.
I've all of a sudden this great gift of people are like, would you come and do a concert? You know, I'm turning on the radio and hearing my music. That just opened the creative floodgates for me in a way that, it was almost like I'd been on the sideline for so long. Mm-hmm. Now I was in the field of play. And man, I had that ball and I was running, you know, like, and I was headed for the try line every time. So
yes.
So it was a wonderful period. And I toured and I made albums like South of These Days, which sort of continued a bit of the Northern thing.
Yep.
Tropicali, which was in response.
A great song.
Mm-hmm. Well, the album Tropicali was in response to my returning to Mackay. Something of a conquering hero, you know what I mean? I sort of came back after all those years of struggle. You know, there's nothing like your home community going, good on you, mate. You know, you've represented us. And so there was yet again that boost of people who you knew and respected and regarded and often loved saying, good on you, do it, keep going. So there was this sense of, you know, it wasn't a chore. I'd get up every morning at 5:30 and I'd be writing something new, and then
how wonderful
by lunchtime I'd be organizing a tour to take those songs somewhere else, and then, you know, I'd be looking at getting the recording organized. So we had this incredible, my wife Lynn and I had this incredibly busy period from about 89, 90 through to about, well, it feels like about 2004. It just seemed like we did an album a year. We toured sometimes up to 200 shows in a year. And there's only 365 days in a year. So that gives you an indication of...
Yeah, that's right. It's incredible. You spoke about, and we see that as evidence with your songs and a personal reflection of your life at various stages. Having said that, The Road Less Travelled, which is a magnificent song, is that a reflection of how you see your life?
Oh, look, I think that was right smack dab in the middle of it, you know what I mean? I was busy creatively. I was travelling the countryside. I was going to places that I only dreamed I'd ever see, you know, like in remote Australia. We had a couple of trips overseas for various songwriting things in Nashville and then eventually to record over there.
Mm.
Those songs were all part. Each one has a lot of Graham Connors, you know what I mean? Like, it's a lot of what I was going through.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, you're not a journalist. You're not just writing the story as it is. Of course, there's a degree of creativity that is modifying this to make archetypes rather than sort of like, this is me, and this is my particular story. It ends up being this germ of experience that happened to me happens to a lot of people, and so therefore here's the song that we can all relate to. And Roadless Travel, I think, was very strong in that regard. A lot of people feel they need permission to just go, yep, follow my heart, whatever it is, just I'm going to do that. And if they hear it on the radio, it can be just the one little push they needed. And The Road Less Travelled was part of that for a lot of people.
Yeah, and it must have given you an amazing degree of strength to follow The Road Less Travelled, to follow your heart, and then have it rewarded in such a beautiful way.
Well, the rewards were amazing, really were. And you know, before we knew it, we had 10 albums at the turn of the century, a best of. And then you enter a new phase after a while as an artist, because you've got all this behind you, and you don't. Somewhere along the way, you've got to stop and take a breath, right? It's just put that because the craziness of just moving forward, moving forward, moving forward. Eventually, you've got to sort of say, "Oh, what else have I got to add? What else have I got to offer here?"
Yep.
And so, from about the early 2000s, I had an album called This Is Life, which is a lot more reflective of some other work. It's an album that I'm extremely proud of and love dearly.
Mm-hmm.
The Moment, another one that covers that too. And then we move into a sort of, it's funny, your career has these phases.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was around about 2000, and I think I had about three or four albums in the 2000s, and then 2010, I'd had a pause of about 4 years, and I came back with an album called Still Walking, which garnered a lot of critical attention, and it was very well received from my audience again, and it kicks you off on another spate of an album a year and a tour. And
It's a beautiful thing. I mean, your writing is, for instance, you give a focus to your childhood and your life, and not only through Mackay, but in northern Queensland, Sydney, et cetera, et cetera. And it doesn't matter where an Australian may live. Australian may live in Perth and listen to your music and feel attached to that because, of course, they feel as though you're giving voice to a story of life.
That's when you're on the ball as a writer.
Mm.
Do you know what I'm saying? I worked in music publishing in that period I told you in the early 80s. And writers would come to me with extremely personal songs that, to be honest, I could not understand the full ramifications of what they were saying.
It was
too much obscurity.
Yes.
You've got to find a way of turning your experience into someone else's experience as well. That's really the key to effective writing. People have to read or listen to what you're producing and say, that's me, I've been there, I feel that way. Is that how he responded? I responded differently. You know, it's that sort of, people need a conversation with art.
Yes.
To make it worthwhile.
Yes, that's well said. And there's an art to doing that in itself and to producing that art. You know, it's Melinda Schneider was talking about a song of hers the other day, and the women that she was speaking to on the ABC, Graham, were saying how they related to that song, and Melinda was taken aback. She said, how could you relate to that song? I talk about my grandmother, my mother dying early, et cetera, et cetera. But it was the way the song had been constructed that allowed people to relate to it. So I think you do that on another level altogether. You do invite people into your life, but at the same time you invite them to think about their own lives.
Well, I think that's the key. You know, if you ever read any great literature, you're in the book by the time you get to the end. You're in the book, and all these characters that are around you are generally people you know.
Mm.
You know, they may have other names, but you know them in some way. You know what I mean? It's like...
And you're reluctant to finish the book.
That's right. Well, only to find another one that's equally enjoyable.
Yeah.
So,
and the brilliance of albums and your music is that you can put them on whenever you want, and particularly now with the access we have to music electronically, you can listen to Graham Connors anywhere, the supermarket, anywhere you want. But it's just a lovely thing. How was Tamworth this year?
We had a wonderful time. Tamworth was a little buffeted by the bushfires and the drought. There's no doubt about it. This country is hurting at the moment, and a lot of the people who support country music live in the regional centres.
Yes.
And the regional centres have been battered, there's no doubt about it. The resilience of community and spirit is all getting called out at the moment because it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can only look to each other and assist each other to rebuild the you know, and to look ahead and and to think about new ways of doing things, for goodness sake.
I think
I think we're actually being challenged, really seriously challenged, with a lot of issues at the moment.
Yes, yes.
And as a community and a country, we're really in need of leadership that draws together the best and the brightest.
Yes, and not... I understand what you're saying. And it is a challenge too, Graham, I guess. And the back of mind and the back of the story is also that we fear, but we shouldn't fear. But I guess there is a fear that it's not going to get any better.
Well, that's a human response when you get hit with a few things in a row, isn't it? You know, it's like up here we have had a couple of bad cyclone years where various parts, the islands and the coast, have received a battering. You know, I'm talking about over the last 10 to 15 year period. And people start to dread what was once the most wonderful time of year, the wet, you know what I mean? Then it becomes, but is it going to be, are we going to be damaged again? And some of these resorts we've had up here are only just opening after, you know, 7 or 8 years hiatus due to damage caused from that. And now the people affected in these bushfire regions, it'll be 7 or 8 years before, you know, houses are built, greenery appears, wildlife comes back, and that's, we've just got to have faith and confidence, and I'm sorry to say, we have to do practical measures. We have to have practical measures, something that we're actually committed to change that protects the environment and ourselves simultaneously, and that is a big, big ask, because human nature being what it is, we just want, we're basically complacent, we just want things to go on the way they have.
Yes, that's right.
Facing change is hard.
And even when it's not, we pretend that it is, perhaps.
Yeah, well, that's right. Oh, we can always, you know, as soon as the greenery starts to grow on the black stump, people start saying, oh, regeneration, isn't it fabulous?
Yeah, what bushfires?
Yeah, yes, well, you know, it's going to be interesting. It's a very important time in our collective history, I think, because no one can deny the population has increased, the use of land and resources have increased. It's very difficult to draw parallels with a century ago or happened to be and say, oh, yes, well, okay. But anyhow, I am no expert. I just hope that we as a community, and particularly those that we entrust with trying to bring about these issues, can put us all together and come up with some serious responses to it that take the fear out of people's lives.
Yes, I can understand you saying that, and it's interesting too, Graham. Someone sent me an email recently with records showing that they had a heat wave about 120 years ago, and I responded by saying, well, what has that got to do with anything? Where's the relevance? So Tamworth was great, and I believe you got on stage with Don Walker.
Yes, Don and I performed a song called "The Indian Pacific," which is a Joy McKeon song.
Right.
We performed it together in celebration of Joy's 90th birthday. It was a wonderful celebration of a woman who's dedicated, you know, her creativity in her life to Australian country music, you know, through Slim and Alone. And I have a great love and respect for Joy, and it was a great opportunity for us all to perform a song of hers and, you know, hopefully reinvigorate it in some way with our own sort of styles. And it was a very successful concert. That was a high point, I believe, of Tamworth 2020.
How wonderful.
And, of course, Don had been there with Cold Chisel, which was also another very successful outdoor concert, so that was great.
Well, it's lovely to hear you say that. I've interviewed Don and Jimmy too in the past for the magazine, and it's nice that we can add you to that collection now too. I think Tamworth is such an experience, and to get on stage with Don and do that, because if it's a song from Joy, it's a fair bet it's going to be a magnificent song.
Well, Indian Pacific is one I chose, and both Don and I, though, it was rather hilarious. We're quite on the nervous side of things, because you know how you just... We're both writers, okay? So this is what we do as a living, and the last thing you'd want to do is make any sort of error in the lyric or anything like that. So we were a bit on tenterhooks.
You looked nervous. I saw a photo of you, and Don had his head down laughing, and you looked as though you were a bit nervous too.
Well, we did ourselves proud. It came out well, and it's Don and I go back a long way. We wrote a song for my album, The Road Less Travelled, actually, called Heart Creek Debutante Ball. We co-wrote that all those years ago.
Good song, yeah.
And he's one of the greats, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, he is indeed, and you are too, Graham Connors. Now, just a couple of questions to finish things up, Graham, if you don't mind. Will you write a song about the bushfires?
I have no idea. You know, it's like sometimes these things are so raw that it needs time for it to digest. There are so many particular stories of suffering and more than that, triumph. There's bravery. There's all these different elements. The whole human experience has been represented in this short period. And as a writer, sometimes, as I said, you're not a journalist. You need to let the subconscious... There's magic in the subconscious, whatever anyone says.
Yep.
Just leave things alone for a while, and next thing you know, it'll come back to you in a way that's meaningful for you. So I have no idea. I never have a knee-jerk reaction to anything, whether it's a celebration or whatever, or a sad moment. I generally take a little time to let it work its way through the subconscious.
Well, that is reflected in your music, Graham, because it just seeps through into you, your music, and it's something that's timeless as well. And that's you're able to take your time if you keep writing some wonderful songs, so that's beautiful. And also, look...
Gee, Greg, I have to say, I'll keep talking. If you keep talking like that, I'll keep this interview going for hours, I mean, honestly.
Oh, no, geez, mate, I tell you what, I've been meaning to interview for about 30 years.
I'll be sourcing a copy of The Last Post to see how we turned out. Thank you so
we'll
much.
No, we'll be sending one. I'll get your address later from the PR.
Yep.
And so that's fine. But look, finally, will Randy Newman ever get airplay?
Well, someone said to me, "What are you picking away? You know, why Randy Newman? He's got all these films. He's got all these great songs."
Yeah.
When I was a big fan of Randy Newman's at the beginning of my career, and I couldn't understand why this man was not getting played on pop radio. I mean, we had covers of "You Can Leave Your Hat On" by Joe Cocker and all that sort of stuff, and everyone every now and then out of a film would come a Randy Newman song, and I kept saying, why doesn't someone just play him on the radio, for goodness sake? Everyone will love it and John Prine is the same, you know what I mean? It's like, these are artists that I've really admired for a long, long time.
John's very good too.
John Prine, well, I've seen Randy in concert, I've seen John Prine in concert, I'm going to see John Prine again this year in concert.
Wonderful.
And I sometimes think maybe that there's a bit of, I love these guys, and maybe that's sort of reflected in my career in some way. I have the occasional hit, and then all of a sudden there's silence for a while. It's not as if I'm not doing anything, and my audience are listening and they're doing all that sort of stuff, but you're not on the television or anything like that, you know. So I think, well, maybe it's the sort of music I write that is really, sometimes it's not meant for hit radio, you know.
No, I think you might be right too, because we don't want to hear something. It's like you don't want to stare at a Van Gogh painting or something for too long. You want to see it at your own pace. You don't want it shoved in your face all the time. But the funny thing is, then when Randy eventually had his his one song, I think.
Short People.
Yeah, and then he copped all that flack for it. So you can imagine him not wanting to do that again.
No, I can, well, that's exactly. I think Randy's in a happy place, to be honest. I don't think he's got a problem at all. But between his films and his wonderful music, I'd suggest that he couldn't care two hoots about the radio.
No, magnificent. And thank you very much, Graham Connors, for being part of this interview. It's been a pleasure.
Greg, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I really appreciate the fact that you've listened to my music and you've taken the time to be thoughtful about the interview. So thank you.
Thank you so much.